I'm never clear when you're actually going live, like when it actually goes live. I never trust it, but it says we're live, so
oh, good.
What the heck. Tom Shalhoub here.
I don't trust Tom, so it's perfect.
Yeah.
You don't trust the technology, I don't trust him, it's a perfect match.
Hello?
How to be Tom Shalhoub. Starring Tom Shalhoub. You know, not everybody wants to be Tom Shalhoub. But for those people who do, I guess this podcast is for them. I mean, you got to model yourself after someone, right? Might as well be me, Tom Shalhoub.
You can probably see we're here with Dr. Drew, and we're doing a live video, which is also going to be a podcast.
Yeah.
As I told Dr. Drew, what I like to do sometimes is just turn the camera on, and we go live, and then I'll just take the audio from this, unless it's terrible and you're embarrassed by it all.
Well, so far... I have questions.
Then I'll just put the MP3 into my podcast. So, Drew, thanks for being here.
Of course.
Let's start with like a kind of a current events thing, because you just sent me a text, and I don't even know what
yes.
it entails.
I sent you where to buy tickets for an event that I'm going to be moderating. I'm literally the moderate moderator at this event in San Jose. I think it's the San Jose Civic Center. With Asim Malhotra and RFK Jr., and we're going to be talking about government capture, regulatory capture by pharmaceutical and healthcare and food industry. I'm very interested in all that. And RFK, I've interviewed him a couple of times, and it's interesting. The first time I interviewed him, he went, "You are so brave to interview me." And I thought, I just am interested in what people have to say.
Yeah.
I'm not brave. This is a time to kind of explore things and figure out what's going on. God knows the world gets worse every day. I mean, I got canceled on every show I was supposed to be on today except yours. Thank you.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
well, that's just the situation that's going on in Israel. It's caused the breaking news. And so then you're normally lighthearted guests. I mean, I guess you would be on the lighter side of things usually.
Yeah.
And, you know, myself, people want me on to do kind of usually...
No,
like,
you're going to be talking military, ambassadors, intelligence. So
yeah.
That's who you're going to talk to.
I mean, I could do it.
That's who I go to listen to. That's what I want them to interview.
Yes.
You know? And sort of experts, you know,
on
various topics of intelligence.
That's the thing is that I don't think I'm ill-equipped to speak on any subject of the day. But the thing is, if Fox News thinks of me as the comic relief guy,
right.
and then they cancel me when I'm on breaking news,
yeah.
I don't want to, you know, take offense at that and say,
no.
like, you know, it's people have their strengths, and if you're going to have a general on instead
cancel
of me.
Cancel everything for breaking news. You know
yeah.
what I mean? I remember I was at CNN for almost 10 years.
Right.
And they would cancel us all the time for breaking news. Just all the time.
Yeah.
People forget I was a CNN. I had a show on HLN. I was on Anderson Cooper regularly. I was on Don Lemon almost every night for long, long periods of time.
What was your HLN show? What was it called?
It was called. It had different names. I think towards the end it was called Dr. Drew or Dr. Drew on Call or something.
Yeah,
like
because headline news was it was CNN.
I was right before Nancy Grace, I think.
Right.
So and we ended up covering. A lot of court stuff because Nancy was killing it with that. So we would sort of pick up on it. We had a whole different take.
Yeah.
I would bring in a bunch of psychologists and jurisprudence experts and stuff. We'd sort
right.
of try to figure out what's going on with these people and what's likely to be true, you know, based on human reality. And she would do her thing, her Nancy Grace thing.
Right.
And we got great ratings when we would do that. And then we got a new guy in. Jeff Zucker put a new guy in that announced that we were going to have a new network based on social media.
Right.
And
was Glenn Beck on at that time? Because Glenn Beck was HLN, wasn't he?
No, I think he was CNN. I'm pretty sure he was CNN.
Okay.
So it was Jean Velez, Mitchell, me, Nancy Grace, and Joy Behar was on with
right.
us for a while. And
she brought me in to be a possible sidekick for her, believe it or not. Well, people, the way that the world has...
This is the part people don't get.
Yeah.
CNN was a very... I never had any problems over there. I fit right in. No one ever told me what to say. Nobody. I was never saying anything that seemed out of line with what they were doing there. And now I'm not invited back. And same thing with you, I imagine. You're not on The View regularly.
No. And the thing, I used to open for Joy Behar when she was doing stand-up.
No
and
kidding.
So I would come in as a comedian and just do the job.
Interesting.
And she liked working with me.
I used to be on her show all the time. I like Joy. I like working with Joy. She's very smart.
I pulled out a picture the other day. It was a live storytelling show. Me hosting it. My guests were Joy Behar and Gavin McInnes.
Wow.
And she got along with him. This was a decade ago, like 10 years ago. You know, 20, not even, probably 2014.
Dude, 5-6 years ago, all those people got along.
Yeah.
It was
really
sort of into 2016, 2017, everybody went haywire.
Yeah.
And that was that.
So the...
But I want to say, when we're on Gutfeld, I think I was on Gutfeld with you last time, maybe, or something. And when he takes aim to Joy and some of The View, I was on with Anna Navarro all the time on Anderson Cooper. I get very uncomfortable.
Oh, you do?
And sometimes he takes aim at people that are really my friends.
Yeah.
Like, still my friends. I manage to maintain. Because I'm so moderate. I'm so in between everything.
Well, you have to do that, and you...
No, I used to fight the right.
Yeah.
I used to have to fight... I was advocating for HPV vaccine. I was advocating for morning after contraceptives. But I was fighting them on that. And then all of a sudden, whoa, we moved the other way. I feel like these frames... I just sit here in the middle, and the frames just keep going back and forth of what a right and left leaning person is believing these days.
But did you change at all, or do you feel that you've been steady?
I have been. If anything, I've gotten more moderate. Like more. I thought I was more of a libertarian, frankly, until I met Kat Timpf, and I thought, oh, I have a heart. I can't be libertarian.
Right. Okay.
That woman is a libertarian, and she's harsh. And my friend of mine, do you know Leo Terrell?
Yeah.
Yeah. He used to give me shit about this. He would always go, oh, because I was complaining about stuff I wanted to do for the homeless. He goes, oh, Miss Libertarian, who do you want to do that? I go, government. He goes, oh, Libertarian?
Yeah.
You want the government to fix that? And I thought, all right. And so I had to watch it. So I refined my middle ground position. And I'm fascinated by people that are stirring the pot, like RFK Jr. and Vivek Ramaswamy. I've interviewed him once.
Who is this other guy that you said? So on the panel you're doing, is it a two-person?
It's Asim Malhotra, who's a cardiologist who has been very concerned about the vaccine. And
I know. He's been on Rogan.
Yeah.
Okay.
Smart guy, good guy. I was one of the first guys to interview him because I saw some of the stuff he was writing. And I thought, oh, this is interesting. I want to talk to him.
Yeah.
And don't agree with everything, but it's important to think about these things, right? Because now we have all this myocarditis data. And there is a paper that was published 3 days ago in Circulation that was breathtaking. It really upset me. It has to be confirmed, but it suggests as many as half of the young males that get myocarditis, which is relatively, it's uncommon, but not that uncommon relative to serious risk of the illness, the COVID illness. It's rather common compared to serious consequence of COVID in that age group. And half of them are going to have long-term, lifelong cardiac problems.
Yeah.
It took my breath away when I read it. And so that really upsets me. We'll see where that goes.
Yeah.
Anyway, Seem is worrying about a lot of stuff. He's worried about vascular disease and stuff. And then some woman whom I don't know is a big food person, like what's in our food and what has captured there. And then RFK Jr. is going to do his thing.
And he's kind of does both of them. Obviously,
he does everything.
He's big on the vaccines, but he's also very big on like nutrition and
his
food and
military. So his thing is where the government has been captured by corporations.
Yeah,
which I share his concerns. I want regulators to be regulators and to be able to do their job, and not be people who used to be in the business or regulators to go down to the business. That back and forth shouldn't happen. In other words. Look at where people go who are working the FDA. They go work in Big Pharma.
Yeah, yeah.
Where does Big Pharma work? They work over at CDC.
So that's what regulatory capture is, that the industries capture the people?
They capture the people and maybe our elected officials with money.
Yeah.
So there's different kinds of captures. Good question. That's something I'm going to ask RFK Jr. What is the extent of capture?
Yeah. So I had an idea that I was thinking about, because people always say, you know,
we should talk for an hour, not 25 minutes. We're not going to make it in 25 minutes.
Well, I know, because I tend to be very free.
Me too. I love it.
But this was my concept that I never heard anybody talk about.
Do they have questions out there? Can we see if there's a...
We probably could.
There's a chat?
I, I get worried that when I look at the, when I try to look at the chat
phone.
That I'm going to disconnect
it. No, look at your phone.
Okay.
Just put it right side up. Just.
What do you mean?
Just do it like this. And there should be.
This phone, though, is helping that camera to
take me.
I know,
I get that. This should be.
That's why I'm glad that it's not reacting to you.
All right. I give up. What platform are you streaming on?
I'm doing it because I use this Mevo camera.
Yeah.
And then I just go out to YouTube and Twitter at the same time.
Okay, YouTube and Twitter. So
it's
I'm
multi.
Go on Twitter.
I'm on the multiverse.
What is what Tom Green used to call the Webovision?
Yeah.
I'm going to look at Twitter.
Yeah, look at Twitter. While I formulate this thought.
Okay, go ahead.
And everyone's always doing, we got to have term limits, and then we've got to have people that, you know, you don't allow them to go into the industries they regulate for a certain amount of time and
for
all
something.
That kind of stuff, right?
Yeah.
How about this? Shorten or...
No, I don't have answers. I really don't.
Okay.
Oh, here it is.
And
oh, quiet.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay, we're on a Spaces.
We're gonna have people that
we're actually on a Twitter Spaces.
Oh, we are. That's funny the way they've done it then, because I'm going through the camera.
Wait, it's a little different. It's a little different than a Spaces. You're right. It's just a Twitter video.
Twitter Live, yeah.
Which is
like what used to be Periscope.
Yes, sort of.
Yeah.
But hang on. If you guys want to just all right, I'll tell you what. Tag me. At Dr. Drew, and I will watch my stream here, and you
You're
tell me if you
such
have
a multitasker. Because when I watch your show, I mean,
ask,
I was going to call
Dr.
it a podcast,
Drew.
But
no,
ask
it's a show. Yeah,
it's a show. It's a TV
it's
show.
Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday at 3 o'clock Pacific. Though tomorrow we're going to do it at 1 o'clock Pacific with Rob Schneider.
Oh yeah, okay.
And a special guest, a couple special guests actually.
1 o'clock Pacific.
Yeah. So it's 4 o'clock here.
Yeah.
And then I have to wrap up and run over here to do Gutfeld. If they still broadcast, right? They might not do it.
They might not do it tomorrow.
Yeah.
But it's scheduled to have a show tomorrow.
Okay, good.
But here's the thing.
Okay.
What's you multitask on your show and you have questions come up.
Yes.
You take this and then you go into an ad for this.
Yes.
And you go to, and I asked, how do you do it? And you said, it's easy. My wife does it. Like, you know.
It's super. The thought bubble over my head as I walk through my life now, it's like, this is all so much easier than practicing medicine. You have no idea. You don't even understand how much easier it is. So they could ask me to juggle anything. It's still easier. Still easier than
I just think the all the things that are coming into your show, it's very it's like a broadcast channel. I mean, it is a broadcast channel, but you're doing it all yourself from your home. It's quite amazing.
It's really.
I'm going to figure out how to do it.
No, it's an incredible thing that we live in this day and age when you and I can go out to internationally right now. And
yeah.
We set up a little studio in our home. By the way, the original thing was I wanted to. I was so upset by all the fear and anxiety mongering during COVID, particularly that first year.
Yeah.
And I was doing a nightly news broadcast on a local news channel in Los Angeles. And the news director came up to me after. We were like into it probably 6 months, and he goes, this is an extinction event, right? I was like, extinction event? This is nothing. What? Oh my God, you're a newsroom. What have we done to people?
Yeah.
This is a billion miles from that. This is a respiratory virus. And so my instinct with that streaming show at the very beginning was sort of be like the French underground.
Yeah.
And just quietly give out information and try to help people stay cool.
And you did that. And we talked one time. We were in here doing a show very early on. It was before they shut everything down, but it was when the panic was starting.
Yes.
And you and I were very much, you know, talking about how everyone was losing their minds.
Yes.
But then I almost thought that there was a sense when I would watch your show, you kind of did have a mea culpa and you were like, wait, I'm back. I'm taking this more seriously now. But then you kind of came. Did you go in kind of a wave? Would you?
Yeah, I would say so.
Yeah.
I mean, I learn things like other people. I still, as I look back on my excesses, I got a little hubristic. That is the enemy, man. Irrational certainty is the problem of our time.
Uh-huh.
Particularly on medical topics. There's no certainty on medical topics. There's rational uncertainty. And I started pushing so hard against the panic mongering, I got excessive. I became excessive. So I started using comparisons and things. But, you know, by the way, there is a comparison. I was just reading a paper, a very, very elaborate paper from Hong Kong, that was saying Omicron hospitalizations are still, you know, less than H1N1. And that was the comparison I kept making. It's like, we just went through a pandemic,
yeah,
and you don't even know it.
Yeah.
And now we're going through a worse one, but we're going to freak out about it? That's what I was sort of going, like, no, don't do that. And I kept saying, by the way, and when people took aim at me, they cut this part out. And this part also turned out not to be a good idea. I said, just listen to the CDC and listen to Fauci, and we will get through this.
Right.
Fauci was one of my heroes back in the AIDS epidemic. I was deep working in that back in my early days. And he was extremely good leader for that. I mean, he really, I see some of the same tactics that came back in this pandemic, and it was not appropriate for this one. But I always appreciated him during HIV and AIDS. It was an incredible time. And so I just kept saying that. Of course, everyone cut that part out whenever they show a video of me saying something excessive.
But
and I apologize.
I'm assuming, though, that you've walked back on that because we shouldn't have trusted the CDC and Fauci, right?
Yeah. Correct. That was a mistake. Yeah. Well, if they had done what they'd always done, they surprised me. Even then, we would have been better off than listening to the New York Times. You know what I mean? If we had just, and by the way, the press is what I think adulterated the CDC and Fauci. It made them freak out and, you know, have to do things that they shouldn't have done. But be that as it may, I apologized and I said, look, I'm going to go volunteer for the New York Corps of Physicians to go work in hospitals and the California Corps, which I signed up for immediately. And I actually went so far as the interview for the New York Corps. And at that point, the pandemic just ended. The New York Corps just stopped. Mm-hmm. So they didn't ask me to come out here. But I had a really interesting experience with the interview because they started saying, you know, can you do this? Can you do this? And I thought, yeah, I did that for years. And I thought, oh, my God, internists aren't able to do that anymore. You have to be a hospitalist. Back in the day, yeah, I did all of it. And so I was looking forward to it, to come out and you really use my skills again. And they just never asked me to come. And the California thing was in disarray. They never even got me into an interview. I don't know what they were doing.
After this whole thing, one of the things I want to do heading toward the end of my life.
Oh, my God.
You know, we're heading to what I'm...
You're getting too much... You're getting too involved with your character of Mr. Biden.
I know. But, you know, you have this sense of that, too. You had a... I think you have a good sense of mortality, having had your brush with cancer.
Well, that I'm a general internist, and one of the things I noticed early on in my internal medicine training was, oh, when everybody else is done with them, they send them to us to die. We do the death and dying stuff, and so death and dying is a very distinct reality for me. And I'm familiar with it. I know what it is. I know how it works, and it can be gracious and dignified. And we shouldn't be so. We shouldn't hide it away so damn much. We should be. It should be. Life should be celebrated. We're living 90 years these days. We have to celebrate that, and we can do so.
And you are a, you know, what do you call it? Like a seize the day kind of guy since the cancer, I think, right? This is the way you always talk. This is why you did this. The Masked Singer, right?
No. The cancer didn't bother me at all because
didn't bother you, but after didn't.
No.
When I said, "Why did you do Masked Singer?" and you said, look, I'm not going to be around forever. I want to do there's certain things.
Yeah, I was losing my voice.
Okay. Uh-huh.
That had nothing to do with cancer. I used to be an opera singer for like when I was very young.
Right.
And I noticed I was losing my mid-range, and it turns out I have all kinds of structural problems in my chords. And I thought, if I'm going to do anything public, I better do it right now because that's going away. That I don't like. I like that less than damn prostate cancer.
Yeah.
So when I got prostate cancer, I thought, oh my God, at 50? I knew I'd get it by 70. It was no doubt in my mind because dad, uncle, everybody had it. I was like, I'm going to get it. But at 50, I was like, oh, that is not fair. But immediately the next thought of my head was, oh, I'd much rather have that cancer than any other,
Because it's...
It's slow growing. It's easy to treat. It's most of the outcomes are very, very good if you get it in time.
But I think every time I talk to you on a personal level now, I hear some form of, look, we're not going to be around forever. We'll just do this now. Last time I was talking about Joe Biden, I said, oh, I got to do another one of those Joe Biden videos. And you said, relish that.
It's not
going to be around forever. You're not going to... Like,
oh, no.
You got a good gig.
About everything.
Yes.
That's called gratitude, my friend.
Uh-huh.
I am so grateful. I told my son the other day, I said, I should just be in my office and I would still be in the hospital. I don't know how I would have done that, but I love hospital work. And I worked in a psychiatric hospital for 30 years. I had this incredible experience. And this thing happened to me by accident. It was a radio show and then a TV show and then another TV show. And I would just sort of go, all right, what's that? Let's explore that, see how that works. And
yeah.
I would just do it. It wasn't until about 2010 to 2014, I started looking at myself going, okay, you've got three TV shows. You're in television. Pay attention to it. Because I was really always like, whoa, no, not
yeah,
really.
Yeah. This is not my real career. Yeah,
but then when I started really sort of trying to use all this work, to do something good, it's been very satisfying. And so I'm so grateful for all this. Like I said, it's so much easier than practicing medicine. This is fun and creative.
Yeah.
And it makes a big difference. You can make a difference. I'm so, so, so grateful for all this stuff. And it just happened to me. It wasn't a plan. Trust me, still isn't a plan. I don't know what. Yeah, this technology keeps evolving. I just go, all right, let's go try that.
Yeah.
So my wife's now producing everything I do digitally, which is, who knew that would happen? That's crazy. And she's very talented at it.
But was she talented at it, or she learned because of what
she
had to do?
She's always been a very creative, talented person.
But she wasn't in the TV business.
No. Yeah, who knew she was good at this? This is like out of the blue for me.
Yeah. So what I was saying about the, I look to myself at the back half of my life, you know, and you're thinking, okay, how are we going to manage this, you know, going forward? I'm a comedian. I want to have I want to keep performing. I want to keep busy, you know, and so I'm looking at the back half of my career, the back half of my life. And because of this whole COVID thing, I want to get a handle on, you know, medical. I don't trust the hospitals. I don't trust the medical system. Mm. I want to find a good doctor who's got one of those things around his neck. And, you know, like...
Stethoscope.
Yeah, I want to get a good family doctor who I trust.
Yes.
I don't want to be in the hospital until I have to.
Okay.
And this is something that happened during COVID. People are rushing to hospital. They shouldn't have been in the hospital.
Correct.
They should have had their doctor.
Yes. And dying in the hospital. We were talking about death and dying. That's a bad idea. You should die at home.
Yep.
Hospice. They know what they're doing. But in any event. So, interesting. You probably aren't going to find what you want without some sort of concierge service, a concierge doctor, which means you pay $800 a year for the privilege of having somebody spend time with you.
Right.
Because otherwise, they have to go every 5 minutes. They have to just go. Because insurances dictate what they can and can't do.
Right.
And if they get that, you know, base, then they're secure for the year or whatever month, and they can kind of take their time and not mill through everybody. So in all probability, you need that kind of doctor. I would advise that you look at people's training. This is the interesting thing to me is people don't ask about doctor's training. Ask about our training.
Yeah.
Where'd you go to undergraduate?
How do I know that? Well, they say Stanford. That sounds great to me. I mean,
well, if you did a Stanford degree in French literature, you might go, well, when you get to the sciences, as opposed to somebody who did a biochemistry degree or maybe has a graduate degree in biochemistry, you know there's a scientist there. Mm-hmm. I want to know there's a scientist. You don't have to have that. I also want to know there's a humanitarian. So to be able to speak a couple languages and be well-read, I'm all for that too for the doctorate. Check this out. We want you to do that. Also, where'd you go to medical school? Now, that's probably not as important because all the medical schools are kind of equivalent, kind of. And then where'd you do your training? Have you been teaching? Where do you teach? And what departments do you teach? And what capacity do you teach?
Mm-hmm.
That kind of thing. And like people never ask me that. I'm a fellow American College of Physicians. I'm a fellow of the American Board of Addiction Medicine. I taught in three different departments for decades, internal medicine, adolescent medicine, and psychiatry. Mostly in psychiatry.
I think a lot of people, just for, you know, they see Dr. Drew, they knew about Loveline, they knew about this, and I think they just think you were a psychologist or a psychiatrist.
No,
and
then I'm an internist. I did general medicine, inpatient medicine, and then initially medicine in a psychiatric setting, and then addiction in a psychiatric setting. And I got to see everything. I had to learn everything because addiction is right at the crossroads of everything.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it was a great privilege. And now I want to just give that back. I would like to share it because, again, doctors aren't getting that experience. And today, what I did, you'd have to either be a hospitalist or an outpatient internist or a psychiatrist or an addiction medicine doctor. And nobody sees all of it the way I did. And I think that was an incredible experience. View of the human experience, and I like to share that. That's all. So anyway, I didn't answer your question. Your question of how to get the doctor. So the other thing, once you get the doctor...
What's a concierge service? I mean, you said you got to find a...
You have to pay a yearly fee.
What are the big ones, though? What's like the
they
big...
They will say I'm a concierge doctor. You can look it up.
Like those things, you know, a new way to do health, and then they have...
But mostly you want a person in space. You want a human that you can go see. But you want access through medias and stuff, through FaceTime or whatnot, if you should know so need it. And then you go in. Then you go there, you make sure you're comfortable with how the office operates, who the office personnel is, who you're going to be able to contact when you need somebody. Are you going to see the doctor or a nurse practitioner? But concierge, usually you see the doctor, usually. And then meet with that doctor and talk about these things about hospitalization and end of life and make sure he or she is exactly lined up with you or at least is willing to defend your point of view on your medical care.
I want a Catholic doctor. Is that weird? I mean, I want a doctor who believes I have a soul.
Okay.
Because
you may not have to look just Catholic. There may be other ways.
Well, let's go Catholic. If I'm going to go, you know,
I might as well go Catholic. If you want to go all the way,
go all the way. Go, you know, go Rome or go home.
That's interesting. I've not encountered a lot of people wanting a specific religious thing.
Well, the thing is, I want them to be religious, not because I want them to, you know, pray away a sickness or something.
Yeah.
I want them to know that as an old person, I am planning a hereafter. You know, it's not just a...
Listen, but for those of us that, again, deal with death and dying, people that have a very strong faith and a very clear sense of an afterlife, we're jealous of you guys. Like, I'm so jealous. It makes end of life much better.
Yeah.
Much better. I'm always like...
So go for it then. You can't...
I don't have it in me the same way. I've noticed that
I... Can you fake it till you make it?
You can. And I've noticed as I've gotten older, this is generally a trend people get. As they get older, they start thinking more about afterlife something. They start concocting these things a little bit because it helps you deal with aging.
Yeah.
You know. But by the way, in terms of aging well, that's sort of what you're asking about. Vigorous exercise.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, resistance training. It's key, key, key.
Oh, you say vigorous exercise and resistance training, so you want to have both of those.
So
you don't think a guy just don't run around and get on a treadmill. You want to lift weights, the same.
I work with this program called V-Shred that is a combination of these things. And what people leave out is this sort of HIIT cardio. So you do your resistance training and you hit some cardio for very brief and intense periods throughout. It's the way to go.
Mm-hmm. I do yoga. Mm. I do the kettlebell stuff.
Mm.
I do calisthenics and
resistance training.
I mean, what isn't the kettlebell?
Weights, yes, but do it. Like,
okay,
do it.
Yeah,
don't hurt your joints like I did. I destroyed my shoulders. Destroyed myself.
And so what else? So what's going to happen in the world? I mean, you got Kennedy. I mean,
let's figure it out. No problem.
Hates each other. Everyone's screaming at
God,
each
it's
other.
Terrible.
It looks like we're about to have.
Well, let me tell you a story. I'm going to tell you a story. So it'll help everybody feel better. Because I really feel like part of our job in media is to help people, like making people upset and spin and anxious is not helping them. Anxiety and panic never makes things better.
Yeah.
Ever. It was really what upset me about COVID. I was on a plane. Coming out here, and it was a book on my chair, and it was a Lenin biography. I heard Mark Andreessen talking about it on Lex Friedman's podcast. I immediately went out and got it and started reading his great biography of Lenin. Because I'm trying to figure out what the hell's going on right now, because the echoes of history are all over the place.
Yeah,
and you'd be shocked how much this has happened before. It's sitting there. This woman comes by on the aisle, and she goes, "Oh, do you like this book?" And I go, "Yeah, I do." Matter of fact, I told the story, and she goes, "You know, I was a musicologist, and I switched careers and became a historian and expert in Eastern Europe, particularly East Germany and how East Germany evolved." And I was like, "Oh, okay. Well, I'm trying to figure out what's going on. Maybe you can kind of help me." And she goes, "There's cycles of history everywhere." And they're not exactly the same, but they tend to follow these patterns. And the Weimar Republic was very much like the kinds of things we're going through now. Things will get worse, a lot worse, and then they will be great for about 40 years.
And how long is it going to take, though?
I don't know.
Yeah,
she couldn't say it. That's the part I keep asking everybody. Like, how long do you think this is going to take? Just when I think it's starting to melt, boom. Somebody does something screwy.
Have you heard about this fourth turning?
Yeah, I've read it.
Okay, you read that book.
Yeah.
I got the audio book and I went through it because I had seen a play. Speaking of Catholics, I saw a play about a bunch of Catholics. It's called Heroes of the Fourth Turning. And it was a bunch of these conservative Catholics in a cabin having an argument and talking about this fourth turning thing. And I said, well, I don't even know what the fourth turning is. So I got the book. And I mean, the book was written, I think, in the 90s. And it's like, it's coming. The fourth turning went by. And
he would have predicted it already happened the way they were building it up.
Yeah.
I don't know what to make of all that. But I do know that there's clearly patterns. And I have sort of been looking at the patterns of the predominant personalities in a culture. And I wrote a book on narcissism, or did some studies on narcissism, then wrote a book about it. And in that book, I've mentioned, I think, many other places, that I wanted to write a chapter on pre-revolutionary France. Because it was the only, other than the Aztecs, it was the only culture I could find where there was so much abuse of children, sexual, physical abandonment. Pre-revolutionary France was, my God, terrible. Like, only one in six children, actually. I mean, it was just, they'd leave kids on the doorstep of orphanages routinely. The freaking Rousseau had five children. He had this concubine he dragged around with him. Rousseau's an asshole.
Yeah.
And Rousseau, the kind native, you know, he's an asshole. He carried around a concubine. She had five children. He forced her to leave these kids on the stairs of a orphanage. Only one out of five children at that time survived the orphanages. Sexual abuse of children was rampant. It was just so many. And the French, whom I love, and by the way, I'm fascinated with French history.
Yeah.
They glossed over so much horrible stuff. It's unbelievable. And so I kept saying, I think we are in some sort of wave like that where childhood injury creates narcissism. Narcissism creates unregulated rage and grandiosity. Mm-hmm. And when narcissists need to express that rage so they don't destroy each other, they scapegoat. When scapegoating develops, and that's the guillotine, right? I kept saying there's going to be guillotines. I just see the scapegoating mechanism starting to come up.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't know about cancellation. I didn't know about... So there wasn't even social media when I wrote that book, really. And so we're in a scapegoating phase. And the grandiose caring, you're so much. That's not caring.
Yeah.
That's not caring. I saw somebody use some language. I was in a big event a couple nights ago, and he used some language that was like, it made everyone uncomfortable. And this 20-year-old kid behind me go, you're an asshole, boo, boo, boo. And I was like, hey, you want to change what that guy says? Walk down there and go, hey, man, you're doing a lot of good work, but hey, the way that lands, you might want to think about how you're using that language. As opposed to tearing my shirt off and I'm grandiose caring. That is disgusting and it's narcissistic and it is not actual caring. If you actually cared, you'd want to change that guy's use of language and you'd go talk to him.
Yeah,
that's caring.
They're just wanting everyone to know.
It's me.
Yeah, yeah.
The chest pounding and stuff. Anyway, that's all narcissism. It's all narcissism. We've had this huge narcissistic wave. I saw it happen at the psychiatric hospital in the 80s. Mm-hmm. When I arrived there and started working there, the narcissistic, the personality disorder diagnoses were all over the place. By the end of the 80s, it was all cluster B. It just went towards narcissism. By the 90s, it was only cluster B.
What's cluster B?
Borderline, sociopath, narcissist. Essentially those three.
Oh, so those three together make the cluster B.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And it was, I mean, the histrionic is the other part of that. And I was not saying histrionic, and yet our behavior during COVID was full histrionic.
Yeah.
That was histrionic behavior. And so I'm interested in how these childhood experiences and these parenting styles result in these personality trends that, you know, that I just saw a Julia Louis-Dreyfus movie on the way over here too, where in the movie she plays the mom of this 25-year-old kid, and he is sort of failing, and she's constantly rescuing him, telling him he's great. He goes, no, I'm not. I'm failing because you told me I was great my whole life, so I never got a realistic sense of what I can and can't do.
Yeah.
And that's the newest incarnation. So that's her narcissism, right? She can't just stand to see him uncomfortable because it triggers her pain. That's her narcissism creating a certain kind of narcissism in him. I think it's the final wave. I think it's the last wave of the narcissism. And then we'll sort of turn back to more, varied kinds of disorders.
Yeah, there was something I was going to say on Gutfeld recently because we were talking about something and I didn't have time to say it because it was kind of a long thought, but it was essentially about that idea.
Well, Greg gives
that,
you tons of time.
Well, that's the thing.
No, he doesn't.
Yeah.
If you talk long, he'll go, well, that wasn't funny.
And yeah.
He'll just distill.
I don't even know why I can't.
I know. He'll just still cut you down.
But it was about the idea was basically that my dad's generation they didn't think of themselves as big men. They thought of themselves as men they didn't have a lot of, I don't want to say they didn't have self-respect. They didn't have hubris about themselves.
Yeah, they were right-sized.
They were right-sized.
They had
respect for the culture at large. They had respect for the institutions around them and the world at large, and they saluted the flag. But they themselves weren't a great man. They were a man in this great world.
Yeah.
And I think of my generation now as people who are, they think they're great. They're not getting what they deserve. They have no respect for the institutions. But I don't have respect for the institutions because I'm looking at them. They're not behaving well, these institutions.
They're not, but we need to restore that.
I think to be happy, tell me if you agree with this, you have to feel that the world is greater than you. And I think everyone's walking around thinking they're greater than the world.
Correct. And so that, you know, again, working with people with awful, awful problems for many decades. I'm going to tell you what is needed for flourishing. Right, and Aristotle got onto this early. So what's needed for, and we can use the word happiness. I think happiness is a misguided term because in this country we think happiness is euphoria.
Yeah.
And everything we want. And, you know, look, when I first started seeing the happiness conversation come in this country, it was about 25 years ago, and I kept saying, there's nobody happier than my heroin addicts when they get their first hit. They're happy. That is not a good life.
Yeah.
And it's not flourishing. So we got to think more in terms of what is necessary, what's more nourishing than happiness, which is a good life, which is flourishing. Aristotle said you needed three things. You needed techne, some sort of skill. You needed phronesis, which was wisdom. And you developed that. You trained for that. I mean, I'm grateful I have some of that from all this experience I've had in practicing medicine. And then service. You using that, but not service on a grand scale, but, you know, Anna Janet, you know, not like that kid or not like anybody else, you know, not, it's just one offering service to one human being.
Being useful.
But for one person in a real way, that's what nourishes a human being. And I would also add that, so in addition to that mechanism of developing things that we have to offer that can help a person or a family, you should have some concept of faith, whatever that is, just to get out of your own head. Like you said, faith in the institutions, faith in God, whatever. So faith, gratitude. If you're cultivating gratitude, you're in very good shape. And whenever I noticed I'm feeling grateful, I thought, I must be doing okay. Mm-hmm. You have to really work at entering the frame with other people, like being close to other humans, spending time with other humans. If you can do that and also be of service, you're on your way to a life that usually is quite satisfying. I mean, everything else is gravy.
I think we...
I, by the way, would add one more thing.
Yeah.
That I never, ever contemplated. I didn't need to, but I think you need freedom.
Oh.
And I never, ever... A whole life in this country, I never thought about it. All of a sudden, freedom is a word that comes across my lips all the time. And then the bravery, whatever word you want to use, the ability to stand up for it.
Yeah, and that's going to be more important because the, you know, even if the people are not totalitarians, the way that it's going is the way that these, you know, and I don't even like using the word globalist because people start to think it, you know, like I'm paranoid. Person.
Yeah,
but yeah, it's global. Globalism is coming in. People want to automate everything. They want things moving, you know, in a mechanized way.
I would just tell you what I've noticed in medicine, I've noticed in just about everything else these days, is the more decentralized, the better.
Yeah.
In all things, whether it's the economy or the practice of medicine or the politics. You know, Alexis de Tocqueville, who was wrote a famous book in the 1820s called Democracy in America. He was a Frenchman that came here to study the penitentiary system. And he said that the reason democracy works in America is the local practice of democracy.
Yeah, but nobody, it's all going the other way now.
Correct.
Nobody wants to do that.
It's a bad
Everyone
mistake.
Says we need to, and every time something mistake. Happens, whether it after 9/11. Well, we needed everyone to be on the same page. Now we need to, we need the CIA to work with MI6 and work. And everything was not decentralized. It was about let's re-centralize it.
Yeah.
Then with COVID, no one's on the same page. Everyone has to have the same rules, same crazy rules.
It's a bad mistake. It's a terrible, terrible. I hope we learn something from that. I hope. It's a terrible, terrible mistake. And again, the globalists are just another level of integration and centralization, away from the family, frankly. That's the family and the doctor and the patient and the small business owner. I mean, these are the fundamental building blocks of a good society. Humbly.
Well, hopefully we can, like I said, I don't know where I was aiming for 25 minutes because I have a generally short attention span for.
Well, I want to do that. I want to do that bit with you. So, Susan, if you're watching, I have pitched it to him.
Well, let's go
for it.
We're live now, so don't tell them what the bid is.
I won't. I'm not going to.
We have an idea for Gutfeld, really.
For
right?
Gutfeld.
Yeah.
Would it be for tomorrow night?
If it is, it will be.
Because I'm in. If we have a show, I'm in there with you.
Yes.
And that would be kind of funny to do that because Kat is supposed to pay out a Loveline skit that we did years ago. That was the first time I was ever on Gutfeld. Since he left Red Eye. And she's never followed up. So let's beat her to the
punch.
What do
you mean? She's supposed to. She did one with you, and now you
did one.
Up?
We were supposed to do a whole series, and she never did it. So we got to get on that.
You can make her do that. Okay. So how do we end this with? I don't know. I think I just have to.
What should we say to? No.
I mean, literally, how do I end it? Sometimes I don't want to let be.
How do you work this damn thing?
Oh, I should say why I'm dressed up like this.
Yes.
Or maybe should I leave it a mystery? Or
watch what was should they watch? Saturday
if,
show.
If they
watch the
Saturday
show,
Fox News Saturday Night, they will see why I'm dressed in this outfit.
And he likes it too. He digs it.
Yeah.
Why did you come up with a Charles Nelson Reilly invitation? And this, do you know who that is?
Yeah.
You're dressed just like him right now. We just put some big glasses on. Here. I've got some weird sunglasses that maybe would work for Charles.
I like
Nelson
wearing the neckerchief and the tracksuit I got as an homage to Steve Austin in a sketch for Gutfeld.
The great Steve Austin.
It's going to come in again. And Lee Majors watches the show, by the way.
Oh, no.
And he calls Gutfeld after the five, and they talk about the issues.
Why doesn't he bring him on the show?
Maybe he's...
there are so many people that would be great on that show.
Yeah. Oh, Lee Majors should do the show.
Yes.
If he's in New York, but maybe... I know he's down in Texas, and apparently he's going to come see my show when I'm in Houston.
Oh, my God. Do you ever go to Austin?
Been to Austin, but
I do a show called After Dark that I film in Austin. You got to come on that one.
He's so busy.
I'm grateful to do all this stuff. I'm so excited just to do stuff, try stuff. This is fun.
Slide to stop. Okay, so I clicked on the red button, and then it says slide to stop.
Okay,
slide.
So let's say goodbye first.
Let's say goodbye first, okay. But also let's do a quick plug for the thing you're doing with JFK Jr.
Let me get to the date on it. It's RFK Jr. and Maseem Mohatra. The date is October... Hold a second.
Holding.
It's the, I believe... The 27th of October. Yes. Oh, no. Oh, crap. It might be the 28th.
But what's it going to be on? What medium will it be?
It's a huge theater. You've got to come.
So it's a live show. It's not It's not going to be streaming.
Trying to set it up so we can stream it also.
Okay.
So look on my website for the stream if we're able to do it.
Where is San Jose?
It's just below San Francisco. It's where all the... The tech companies are. It's where all the venture capital is that funds the tech companies.
Oh, but it's below. It's Northern California then.
Yeah, it's just like a half hour below San Francisco.
Oh, yeah.
It's right by the airport. Have you ever heard of
San? Backrack wrote that song. Do you know the way to San Jose?
Well, that was before San Jose was San Jose. That was a little horse town then. But now it's Sand Hill Road, which is this crazy money. But 28th of October. It is a Saturday. And we'd love to see you there. We'd love to see you if we do stream it. Keep an eye out for that. And it's going to be about capture and the excesses. And what do we do about things like food and healthcare and mandates around healthcare where they're seemingly we're losing our ability to take care of ourselves and our family without people muscling us into things that we might not want to do or we might want to have access to different things. And to be clear about my position, on vaccines, my elderly patients are all vaxxed and boosted. They all are. They clearly have benefited from it. I've seen no side effects. I've seen a crap ton of side effects in 40-year-old males, and I don't know why we vaccinated them at all. Because after the Alpha Delta wave, everyone's had it. and fine if they want to take a single vaccine, but the boosting, you're just increasing the risk of adverse events and not getting much out of it.
I totally agree with that.
I don't understand why the push on young people and children. I don't understand it. If somebody could explain it to me, yes, it works, but again, for a 22-year-old male, the risk of COVID is approaching zero.
Yeah.
The risk of myocarditis is turning out to be quite a bit more than we thought. And the consequences of that myocarditis, based on that circulation article that was printed just 3 days ago, looks breathtaking and concerning. So
very concerning, but they're going to deny it. And I think, you know, when people always say, well, the answer is money, it's money, it's money. But it's not just the money
it's
for
hysteria.
The vaccine.
It's weird hysteria we're in.
But yeah, they're making
people
a lot of money off the
people
vaccine, but it's
wrong.
Not just that. I think it's this mRNA dream. Like they want,
oh, yeah.
They want the dream of mRNA. Yeah. And that dream that they used to talk about, the idea that, well, pretty soon everyone is going to have a mRNA, and it's going to,
yeah.
And then you could just change it in the lab. And then,
no, it is a great
dream.
Technology. I share that dream. But
not yet.
But you know, we originally conceived of these mRNA products for cancer.
Yeah,
where somebody's dying. So it's worth the risk, and it was, and like I said, worth the risk of my elderly patients, because they would get. I have very complicated medical patients, and they need protection. And elderly people don't seem to have the same risk of side effects. I have not seen anything in my elderly patients. Nothing. They seem fine. But even with them, this latest booster, I'm not quite sure why I'm giving it to them, because there's no data, and the XSB is going away, and the EG is coming in, but it's covering the XSB, but maybe it covers the XG, but I don't know what we're doing. I'm losing track of the science, because it's not really science.
I'm way over the other side on that. So.
All right. So I'm, again, moderate. Reasonable, moderate.
Crazy
right-winger.
Extremist, reactionary.
Catholic.
Yes. Well, you know, we can get the rad trads. We get pretty serious.
No, listen. I used to think that I have done a bit of history digging around Catholicism, and I ended up with great respect for what the church was trying to do. It had excesses, right? Mm-hmm. It had periods where no one's happy with what they did, but they were really trying to get it right, intellectually.
Yeah.
They were trying to be scientists. They just didn't have the discipline to do it, and then they were condemning people like Galileo, who did have the capacity. It was just an interesting thing.
Yeah, that was overstated too a little bit with the Galileo thing. You know, there's
faith and reason. That's what we're talking about here, right?
Yeah.
And that, what would Pope Paul the Great, Pope John, what was the really last great pope that everyone loved?
Well, John Paul.
John Paul, the Polish guy.
Yes.
Yeah. He said something profound. He said, faith and reason are the two wings upon which the human ascends to the contemplation of truth.
I love that.
Come on.
Yeah.
And even if it's just faith that the world isn't going to run off its axis, or the laws of physics will continue to work, or whatever that faith is, he is right. Much like I heard Ben Carson say, he goes, you need a right wing and a left wing of a government so the bird can fly effectively. You need both wings fully engaged.
Yeah, yeah. And it's true. Faith and reason, they go together. But you have these people that are just, no, I'm going to live on reason alone. And it's certainly not the way to happiness, that's for sure.
It's not the way to happiness, and it results in hubris.
Yeah.
And hubris is the enemy right now. So rational uncertainty, everybody. Stay in that zone.
Okay. And watch Gutfeld tomorrow night.
Yeah, well,
this is live.
Are you going to be there? Other than
hopefully.
This?
I'll be in the office, and hopefully stuff to do.
Okay.
And
we'll have to wait and see what that stuff is.
Yeah. Excellent.
Okay.
Thanks, Dr. Drew.
Bye-bye.
Slide.
Uh-oh.
There it is.